presents First Years, a podcast for all but geared toward adult first-time readers of Harry Potter, who need a space to enjoy each book and have adult conversations about it. My name is Sarah, and I'm honored that you've allowed me on this journey with you. Crack open a butterbeer, grab a seat, and let's discuss. Today, we're talking about the insurrection on January 6th through the lens of Harry Potter. Welcome, everybody, to this bonus episode of First Years Podcast. A spoiler that this podcast episode will not be spoiler-free, so please do not listen unless you know the entire plot of Harry Potter, whether that's the books or the movies. We'll be talking about everything. We are going to be talking about one of the things that I always say about why Harry Potter is not just a kid's book is that we can relate it to a lot of adult things. And so we are going to talk about politics, the political climate of the last 4 years, and the attempted coup and the insurrection that occurred on January 6th through the lens of Harry Potter, because there is actually quite a lot of overlap, especially in the last few books. So I have two wonderful guests with me. If you guys want to introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Izzy. I know Sarah from doing originally Harry Potter roleplay on Twitter, which was that, you know, I don't think I've ever been more connected to Harry Potter than during those years, but I'm so happy to be here talking about my two favorite things, Harry Potter and politics. We love that for us. That's it. That's all for me.
I wasn't planning on having to introduce myself, so now I have no idea what to say other than, of course, it's a pleasure to be back, Sarah. This is Steven. Please, God, all the listeners, I hope you know I am the Muggle in khakis, the podcaster in chief. I have a Sorcerer's Stone poster. Sorcerer's Stone poster, that's a tongue twister, over one shoulder, and a poster of RFK over the other. So I am quite literally and figuratively primed to have a fun discussion here today.
Yeah, Steven literally texted me all of the pictures of all of his political posters when I asked for people to join me.
Well, nice. Because a lot of times on one of the podcasts that I co-host, I'll get on these rants and these rambles, and I'm like, the listeners don't come for like my political takes on Harry Potter. They come for like silly Harry Potter crap. So when you put out the bat signal that you were looking for people who are interested in talking about this intersection of Harry Potter and politics specific to the insurrection on January 6th and the overlaps with the Ministry of Magic and all things Potter, I was like, yeah, that's me. Hello. Hi. Happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yes, this is the podcast where we absolutely want all of your political knowledge.
I'm so excited. I just want to say that I'm very excited to hear everything that you both have to say. This is going to be really fun because I'll text my friends and be like, we need to talk about this. We need to talk about, you know, the fear of the name just increases fear of the thing itself. And they'll be like, I really just wanted to talk about how Tom Felton looks now that we're older. And I was like, okay, that's fine. So this is nice. This is a great outlet to channel all of that energy.
Well, when I was prepping for this episode, I went back and looked at the end of Goblet of Fire and sort of went through different parts of Order of the Phoenix. And I just feel like there is just so much. And in ways, it's like opposite from what we've seen in our political climate, where it's almost like opposite because the government and like our main characters are on opposite sides of something. So, I mean, I looked at Percy and the Daily Prophet and the Ministry and Voldemort and the Order of the Phoenix. And I feel like I don't even, like, there's just so much to talk about with this. Like, where do we even start?
a great question. Well, I would love to start by just discussing, like, all the way, I'm taking it all the way back to Philosopher's Stone, where when Hagrid comes to visit Harry, he won't tell Harry what you know who, like, he won't say Voldemort. Like, we start off by, like, not even knowing who this villain is, and, like, not even knowing who this, like, person who strikes so much fear into this person who is also very explicitly described as being, like, large and intimidating because, you know, half giant or whatever. And he won't even say this. So we start off by being like, oh, cool, the most powerful person we have met in this entire series is so afraid of this thing, this, like, you know, of Voldemort. And he finally gets him to say it. But I think that it's so interesting that we, like, the idea that, like, the propaganda in this book, like, or this, you know, story in this series and this world, like, starts so early on and just, like, really builds from there. And I think that's fascinating.
I really didn't think about that before, and I really like the way you put that, where, because obviously later in Harry Potter, when Voldemort does come back, we immediately see the Ministry try to cover it up and yes. be like, nope, yeah. everything's fine, don't worry about it. But it didn't even occur to me that, like, the impact that Voldemort had left in the first war after Harry defeats him as a baby is that, like, people are still, like, don't even want to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, even when we get at that very first chapter of, Philosopher's Stone, where Mr. Dursley is, like, talking about, like, driving back and, like, seeing all these people in cloaks or whatever, and they're, like, all really excited, and, like, they're like, you know who has been defeated, like, they can't even say his name, and he's, like, just recently deceased, so we think. But yeah, there's, like, I feel like we as readers are so much taken along the ride with so many of the characters of, like, we are also influenced by the propaganda that the characters in the book are experience. The way that we think that Sirius is evil before we actually meet him, the way that we, like, get to read Rita Skeeter's exposés and feel like, oh, is this true? Like, we don't know, even though, you know, we know that J.K. Rowling hates, Joanne hates Rita Skeeter and is very explicit about that, so we're not really supposed to, but we still get to read it, you know? We still get to, like, see what it is that every other character is subjected to and sort of get to, like, draw our own conclusions about a lot of different characters, not just necessarily Voldemort, but we also, you know, the Malfoys and the Lestranges and all that jazz. So I think that's a super interesting and mirrors sort of this, like, what we've been seeing in politics over the last 4 years of, like, there's a lot of propaganda that's happened in the last 4 years, especially. So leading up to everything that has happened in the last 2 months.
Yeah. Total side note, the same way that Ron's jokes end up having a lot of kind of, like prophetical, that's not a word, is it? Prophecy-esque truth to them. There is a lot more truth in Rita Skeeter's writings than the sensational journalistic way she's portrayed actually would have you believe. But that's a total aside. I am not here to be a Rita Skeeter truther. Going back to your original point, though, Isabel, about kind of the early kind of foundation setting with Hagrid and You Know Who, you know, I think the way that we're meant to understand this whole You Know Who phenomena is that people just want to forget about what happened, and they're so scared and terrified that we're just not going to talk about it. We're not going to, it's a thing that happened, and, you know, it's just, we're not acknowledging it. We're kind of just blacking out that time in our life. And I think one of the unintended consequences of that is, you know, at best, not speaking about it will lead to future mistakes. Kind of somewhere in the middle of that spectrum is allowing that same type of evil, hatred, you know, bad organization, for lack of a more eloquent phrase, to grow and rebuild. And at worst, what you see with the Ministry all throughout Order of Phoenix is this blatant refusal to acknowledge a core truth, because you've kind of put the wool over your own eyes for so long that you're starting to buy into that falsehood as an active truth in your life.
Yeah. And like when we talk about, you know, just like not even acknowledging something, we see this even outside of the US, like in Spain after the Franco dictatorship. Spain just was like, let's just move on. Let's just not talk about it. We're never going to talk about it. And we're just going to move forward. And I remember when I was studying there, I had a politics professor that literally said, all of Spain's problems come from that, from not acknowledging what had happened and just moving forward and just being like, this is too hard, so we're just not going to talk about it. We're just going to move forward. And I think we also see that, you know, obviously right now, as of recording this, the impeachment trial has ended as of a few hours ago. But we saw that even leading up to it, where the Republican Party was just like, well, Trump lost, let's just move forward and forget that the last 4 years ever happened. And we also see that after mass shootings, where they're like, now is not the time to pass legislation, like because it's like an insult to the victims or whatever. And it's like, no, you have to deal with that. You can't just pretend it never happened.
Yeah, and I think one of, you know, if we're really drawing a direct line here, you know, I think had, full disclosure, I fully believe that the now former president should be impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors for directly inciting destructive violence upon both the U.S. Capitol and the members of Congress inside the Capitol. But having said that, from a more objective point of view, I would say if the impeachment proceedings had happened in that week or two right after January 6th, I think you would have seen a lot more bipartisan push to actually convict the president of his crimes. Whereas, to your point, we kind of let the emotions of the day and the week kind of cool over the past month or so, and then this trial happened. And there were some Republicans who did stand up for law and order, which they so claimed to profess and love, but not enough, because enough time passed where the spin started and, you know, the proverbial Ministry of Magic was able to have their say and really kind of, you know, introduce doubt into the equation.
I just want to, as an interjection in that, is that one specific person made sure that that amount of time passed.
But if I ever see Mitch McConnell, I would fight him on sight. Like, I would truly punch him. I feel like his face would just, like, cave in because he's made of rubber. But at least he looks like melting rubber. But, like, truly, if I ever see him, it is on sight. I would just.
I know. Yeah.
I once accidentally gave a very hard shoulder to Marco Rubio. Yeah.
It's so satisfying.
I wasn't going for it. We were going in and out of an elevator, and I didn't really see who he was because I wasn't paying attention. Next thing you knew, I accidentally bodied a senator. So that was fun.
Nice. Yeah, they deserve it.
As one does.
I want to talk about, like, I think everything that we just talked about connects very well with the whole Daily Prophet, Rita Skeeter situation, like you had mentioned earlier, Izzy. And Stephen, I know you love to talk about how everything's controlled by the ministry in the wizarding world, and the Daily Prophet is no exception. And so I think that what we see in Order of the Phoenix, where the Daily Prophet is sort of making fun of Harry on and off, sort of like making little sly remarks, all of that, like Rita Skeeter laid the groundwork for that in Goblet of Fire. And at the end of Goblet of Fire, Harry even calls out Fudge on reading her articles and like actually having that as a source. And Fudge even is like, oh, like you're really gonna take Harry's word for it that Voldemort's back? Like his scar's been hurting and like he's been having hallucinations. Oh, and he speaks Parseltongue, like you can't trust him. And when you look at Order of the Phoenix, I believe it's right after Harry gets to Grimmauld Place, Hermione and Ron are talking about the Daily Prophet, and it literally says, well, they're writing about you as though you're this deluded, attention-seeking person who thinks he's a great tragic hero or something. They keep slipping in snide comments about you. If some far-fetched story appears, they say something like, a tale worthy of Harry Potter. But you see what they're doing. They want to turn you into somebody nobody will believe. Fudge is behind it, I'll bet anything. They want wizards on the street to think you're just some stupid boy who's a bit of a joke, who tells ridiculous tall stories because he loves being famous and wants to keep it going. And then they also continue and say they didn't report a word about the Dementors attacking you. Someone's told them to keep it quiet. So the Daily Prophet, which is absolutely controlled by the Ministry, has already laid the foundation for nobody to believe Harry after this very tragic incident.
I will say I agree with all of that. What is somewhat ironic, though, about, you know, them saying that somebody clearly told the Prophet not to report on the Dementor attack. Obviously there is a lot of the kind of the slant they're going for with Harry, but I think also part of it might be knowing what we know by the end of that book, that Fudge really didn't know what was going on with that. That was a Dolores Umbridge thing. Like, we see that a lot of times in just modern kind of political events where, you know, when the power behind it doesn't really know what's going on, they're not going to feed into that narrative, right? Because they're not the ones who pulled the strings.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a good guest would have come prepared with like an actual direct metaphor to talk to there and a real example. I don't have one. But that was something that felt ironic to me, was there's some of it that is that kind of narrative development. But also I think part of it probably was just Fudge was like, yeah, this works in our favor, but I didn't do this. So like, let's not push the story.
Do you ever think about how different Harry Potter would be if all of the wizards had social media and could, like, do an Instagram live like AOC did post-insurrection and, like, tell their own story? Like, in a way, in that way, I think social media is a benefit because it just makes me think of how much people have been trying to delegitimize AOC and her colleagues. And their story of the insurrection or their story of the way that they've been treated while, you know, working in at the Capitol, and just how much could be cleared up. Similar to the way that they get, you know, the Quibbler article out of Harry Potter, of Harry's story, like that, similarly enough, like being able to tell your own story holds a lot of power in any sort of society that is like very much built upon stories or built upon the news and built upon like this collective, like us all being on Twitter during the insurrection is like being almost like a part of like a big community group chat where we all sort of have a similar understanding and similar views. Of course, it's also an echo chamber in a way, but that all being said, that having that sort of ability would be great. And nobody's giving Harry that platform. He's like the most famous person in the wizarding world, but nobody's asking him any questions. So.
But that's kind of, so actually, I think the problem for the wizarding world, which I don't need to go down my deep dive of how the economic system is severely mishandled.
Oh, you mean the way that like X amount of, like one galleon equals like 30 fucking sickles or what? Sorry.
That's a whole issue too. I was going, you did it first. I didn't. I just want the record to reflect I was good. That's an issue. The other issue is that like the Ministry controls absolutely everything. And unless Harry gives you like 400 galleons after he wins a tournament, you don't really start your own business. So that's not the point. The point is, in our society, yeah, we in-group, right? And we kind of echo, like there's the right side of the political spectrum that has their kind of news outlets they go to for the truth. And the left / center left has its own echo chambers. And up until the past couple of years, at least, there seems to be a general like acceptance of basic facts. And so at least, you know, you had your places you go for your own kind of spin, but everyone can at least agree on the core premise. And the issue with the wizarding world is there is the Daily Prophet, which is just a Ministry, you know, rag. And then the only other real type of like quote unquote, like, you know, big J journalism that we hear about is the Quibbler, which no one takes as the truth except for like the quote unquote crazies in the story. So there is no like alternate place for people to go where they come around like a shared set of facts, which is an issue because you either have what the government's telling you or the crazy guy who's doing mushrooms in his funky looking house. And that's it.
It's so true. Because we even see that where they're talking about how hard it is to convince people that Voldemort's back, especially because like they already don't want to believe that he's back. But it says, quote, "What's more, the ministry is leaning heavily on the Daily Prophet not to report any of what they're calling Dumbledore's rumor mongering. So most of the wizarding community are completely unaware anything's happened. And that makes them easy targets for the Death Eaters if they're using the Imperius Curse." Which, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, you know, that Imperius Curse and being a target of that, if we sort of see now is like, if we can't agree on a basic set of facts, that's sort of where we see people get sucked into the crazy conspiracy theories. We also see that the Daily Prophet is starting to like twist headlines, and like, so it says that they reported, I think they're talking about Dumbledore here, he'd been voted out of the chairmanship of the International Confederation of Wizards because he's getting old and losing his grip. But it's not true. He was voted out by ministry wizards after he made a speech announcing Voldemort's return. The same thing happens where a few people retire after Umbridge becomes the High Inquisitor. And then in the Daily Prophet, it literally, like after they quote Madame Marchbanks, it literally says, "For a full account of Madame Marchbanks' alleged links to subversive goblin groups, see page 17, trying to discredit her at the end of the article.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't have a response directly to that, so I'm not going to pretend to make something up on the spot, but, you know, like, just point A to point B here, like, direct comparison, you know, people resigned and as power was corrupted and then consolidated throughout the ministry, like, you saw that. We saw that for the past, I mean, it happens a lot in politics, and I don't want to say it only happens over the past 4 to 5 years, but it really happened with pretty blatantly malicious intent over the past 4 to 5 years in a way that I don't think we as a society had seen in a long time in American political history, which is terrifying, which is absolutely terrifying, because, you know, I hate when people say Harry Potter is real life, and here's the example why. But what happened after all of the power kind of rotted the ministry? They went to war. Like, things fell apart to the point where there was war. And I'm not, please God, people who listen to this, I'm not saying a war is going to happen here. But like, January 6th, God willing, is the last time that happens. But if we don't call out, stand up and speak out for, you know, what just happened, it's going to happen again in different iterations, and it's going to continue to, like, you know, tear away at the core fabric of our society, which I happen to think our society, for all its faults, is still a pretty good thing overall. Like, you know, it's a net positive. There's a lot of things we need to fix, but I think I'd rather have it than not. So that's my concern, is we're, you know, we could be headed down a path where you're going to get like a pious thickness in charge of like the U.S. government. You're going to get more Umbridges. You're going to get another Voldemort. Like, it's not good. It's not good.
Well, I mean, one of the points I was going to make was that, you know, Fudge acts the way he does because he is so terrified of losing power that it ultimately ends up being his undoing and being the reason that the ministry gets infiltrated without him knowing.
Do you think that the ministry has a lot of like deep shame about what they let happen in the first Wizarding World War against Voldemort? And also then follow up question, as you think about that, do you think that our government has a lot of deep shame about what they've let happen over the last 4 years?
I think it depends on specific people. I think we don't really know a lot about how things were handled after the first war. But we do know that people were so desperate for Voldemort to be gone, and there was a huge celebration after he was gone the first time, that it made it a lot harder for people to believe that he was back, because they were like, he was such a scary figure that people are terrified to have to go through what they did again. I will point out, though, that a lot of the people that they ended up acquitting that were former Death Eaters ended up just going right back to Voldemort and helping bring down everything again.
Yeah.
One question I have on that note is I don't have a good sense of where the rest of the Wizarding World population fell. Like, you know, in our society, there are certainly a fairly small group of people at the top of the like power chain who are pushing a lot of these, again, at best misleading narratives, but they're backed up by millions of Americans, as we've seen. Whereas, at least the way that I interpret the books, there's kind of this group of a couple dozen Death Eaters who support Voldemort, and they kind of just bully everyone into falling in line. Like, do y'all have a sense of, like what the rest of the Wizarding World population feels? Like, is there, like, a large contingent similar to, like, the millions of Americans that are actually supporting this narrative, or is this just, like, a shock and awe power grab?
I sort of get the idea that it's more of a shock and awe power grab, especially in, at least leading up to the second one. The first one, I would also maybe think so, just because if we're thinking, I mean, if I'm comparing Harry Potter to, like, to British politics, there's, like, certainly less people. And you kind of think about, like, the Thatcher era and, like, how the people who really needed help and support were sort of, like, really impoverished and, like, really were pushed down and had their power stripped from them, like, the working class people. And, like, so that's what that makes me think of is I would say that people probably didn't, like, you look at how impoverished the Weasleys are, like, not saying that they weren't, like, always that way, but, like, war really sucks a lot of power away from people who don't have it already, I guess. That's my take. That was what I thought of. Yes.
Yeah, and it does seem that, like, the people who are on Voldemort's side tend to be, like, the really rich, old money, pure blood families that have a lot of influence in the government. Right after Harry's trial in Order of the Phoenix, Lucius Malfoy is right there talking to Fudge. And he talks about how the Malfoys donate all this money to all these things specifically so that they can manipulate what laws get passed and which ones don't.
Yeah, I mean, if we're naming and shaming, that's what the Falwells do with Liberty University and with all of their kind of conservative, you know, like Christian crusade kind of politics. And it's what you see with the casino magnate, Wynn, Steve Wynn or whatever. Like, this happens all the time in our society. I think the thing is, in Harry Potter, all those rich old white guys tend to also be people who are actively part of the insurrection. Whereas in American political society, there's tons of people who are passively involved, and then like a much smaller circle of people who are the actual Death Eaters in this, you know, twisted metaphor, which I just find interesting.
That is very interesting. I didn't think about that.
Right, because, I mean, again, this comes back to the point of the economic system of the Wizarding World is not really... I'm not going there, but in
America, you are allowed to go there.
I'm curious.
I'm
now,
not prepared. Like... in American kind of capitalist society, while the message has gone so far afield from anything that resembles kind of basic truths or fact or rationale, you know, both the left and the right, for that matter, have their own versions of extreme populism. And the right's version has been twisted far beyond belief, but the core premise is the government is not serving us. Therefore, we, the people, need to change the system to better our lives. In the Wizarding World, Voldemort's whole pitch is, I want power. That's it. He doesn't have a message that has anything, like, yeah, wizards should prevail and muggles should be kind of, you know, dead, gone, whatever. But his whole thing is like, I just want power for power's sake, and wizards are pure, and that's great. But there's not like a cohort of people who he's saying, hey, I'm going to improve your lives. And they're like, yeah, sign me up. I'm in. Like, yay, Voldemort. It's really just the Malfoys and the Crabs and the Goyles and the
McCabe's. Yeah. It's almost like he's promising power and influence two purebloods who already have power and influence.
Well, he does go to the Giants and tries to convince them to join his side. That's, I mean, and the werewolves, right? Like, if we're thinking about them as marginalized groups, like, he does go to those groups and be like, hey, I can get you something. We never really figure out what it is that we never really are told.
Yeah, I sort of do wonder, though, if that was, like, a genuine promise, though. Or if he just wanted these allies before the other side could offer something.
Yeah, no, that's 100%. He wanted more firepower in his army. That's the thing, because, like, the Weasleys, to circle back to them, in theory, are the exact type of people who would be susceptible to the system is broken, come with me and we'll change it and you'll have a better life type of message.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Weasleys are obviously great people with good hearts, but, you know.
Well, you know, Percy does kind of.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Percy does kind of. The other ones don't, but Percy does very much get sucked into that. Well, then again, I did read this thing the other day that was like every Weasley has there's like sets of them, right? Because there's seven. So you have like Bill and Charlie, Fred and George, and then like Ron and Ginny, and you have Percy, who's like by himself and also thusly like very isolated. So the argument being he being the most susceptible to being told, hey, like come join us. We can be your family. We got your back. Which I thought was like, I was like, oh, it all makes sense now. This is why we hate Percy. We don't hate Percy. I feel bad for Percy. I wish Percy the best after he, you know, switched sides and stopped fighting for the Nazis. But like, you know, I don't know. It seems so, you ever get the idea that there's only like 500 wizards in this universe? So I feel like that a lot. And most of them are teenagers at Hogwarts and then like a couple people that we meet at the Leaky Cauldron. They're like seven adults.
I mean, especially because if we're talking about like specifically just like Britain pureblood families, like there's only 28 of them. So it's like Voldemort's ruling
over 28, baby.
Like Voldemort's just ruling over like a tiny village. But speaking of Percy, you know, he definitely, like you were saying, would be more susceptible. And as we see in Order of the Phoenix, completely gets swept up into this ministry message of you have to be loyal to the ministry to the point where you have to break up your own family. Just a couple of quotes from Order of the Phoenix. It says, apparently Fudge has been storming around the ministry, checking that nobody's having any contact with Dumbledore. They think he's just making trouble, saying you know who's back. Dad says Fudge has made it clear that anyone who's in league with Dumbledore can clear out their desks. And Percy knew where his loyalty lay, and it was with the ministry. And if Mom and Dad were going to become traitors to the ministry, he was going to make sure everyone knew he didn't belong to our family anymore. And it also says that Percy specifically takes the Daily Prophet very seriously.
I think part of it for Percy, I think a lot of it is he didn't have anywhere in his family where he belonged, as you said. But I think a lot of it's also just power and prestige, right? Which is what Voldemort and Fudge and all them are seemingly promising, right? Because even before this whole fascism is back and we're actually going to start talking about thing occurred, Percy was always kind of portrayed as looking kind of down at his dad and his dad's career and, you know, the very kind of humble, modest, you know, muggle-loving ways of the Weasleys. And so for Percy, I think it's a lot of, you know, these guys are promising a fast ascent to the top of the food chain. Sounds great to me. You know, I don't care who I step on along the way, which is what we heard about Umbridge, which is what we know Voldemort does and did. So I think that's a lot of it.
We get a lot of this, like, respect, like this like forced respect sort of idea where like you have to respect me instead of like earning people's respect, where you kind of get like people respect Dumbledore. Like we talk so much about how the book like talks so much about how people respect Dumbledore, and then like people don't respect the ministry and don't respect Fudge and don't respect all that jazz. So I just think that's it. That's all I had to share. That was my thought. Class. Class is really interesting when it comes to Harry Potter, because it doesn't really seem like there's like a very much distinguished, there is like a caste structure, and there's definitely like you old purebloods, but it's like old purebloods are respectable to other old purebloods, but not to like, but other people are like, yeah, fuck you guys.
Right.
Which is really interesting and helpful for the story, but not necessarily like consistent with the way that we in our like real, like not Harry Potter society see class and respect and all that stuff.
Yeah. And I think what we see with Percy is one of the things I thought about was just with all of, with how divisive politics has gotten over the last 4 years, you know, we see that what Fudge is doing is literally tearing families apart. And we have absolutely seen that with Trumpism, where, you know, parents and children are like estranged from each other because they just can't connect morally on something, where their values are so different or their beliefs are so different, or they just live in like two different realities where the families are just like getting destroyed from like this one person.
Yeah, I mean, I'll even give an example from my own life. So I went to school in DC, where everybody thought they were going to be in their own kind of acted out version of the West Wing. I certainly did, right? And one of my best friends in college, like my big in my fraternity, like one of my best friends, is a huge Republican. He's, I'll name him, his name's Chandler Thornton. He's currently the national chairman of like the College Republican National Committee. He's, now we kind of call him, you know, a brown shirt, but you know, we always knew Chandler was conservative, but we still like, we were able to have dialogue and be friends. And you know, people make far too much these days about, you get a beer with a Republican, like, you were able to have real conversations about differences. And while you didn't agree, you were able to say, okay, fair enough. And like now he, you know, in 2015, he was pretty vocal about his support for then candidate Trump. And, you know, none of us have spoken to him in years, and we all kind of actively go after him on social media for a lot of things he said and done. And yeah, I mean, it's one friendship and he's a pretty not great guy now, but you know, it tore it apart. Like he lost an entire group of friends because of it. And I guess the moral of this rambling is to say that, like, I don't think any of us thought he was in that wave of political thought. He really kind of saw the power gap, we think, and just attached onto it and said, let's ride to the top. Which is kind of just, it goes to show that, like, you know, that's real. Like the Percy Weasley stuff, but you see power, family be damned, friends be damned, reputation be damned, that happens, which is just sad.
It is. And, you know, I think, because one of the things that really infuriates me is like when people online are like, oh, you know, liberals, like, you be like, just hate everybody who doesn't agree with them. And they only want to be friends with people who agree with them. And it's, that's so not true. But I think because it's not like, when it comes to Trumpism and what it means to be conservative today versus like 10 years ago, it's very different. And I feel like it's no longer just a difference of how to like run things or like a difference of opinion on policy. Now it's like, it's a difference of moral values. So it's like, if you are a Trump supporter, you are signing on to the racism, the sexism, the xenophobia. And for me, it's like, I just can't be friends with somebody who supports that. I cannot be friends with somebody who is racist, who is sexist, who has no problem with xenophobia. So it's not even like, now it's not even a difference of just like, oh, how would you, you know, do this policy? How would you, you know, handle immigration? It's literally fundamental values where, you know, it's like, we can't be friends. And, you know, Percy even writes a letter to Ron in Order of the Phoenix being like, you need to stop being friends with Harry if you want to be successful. Like, he's going to bring you down.
You think Percy would listen to like the Ben Shapiro podcast or whatever it is?
Percy would go on the Ben Shapiro and he would espouse, yeah. He would be like, That is such a great point, Ben, and I'm so glad you brought that up. The things that the minister and I are doing, yeah, 100%.
110%. Yeah. If I ever see Percy Weasley, I'd fight him.
Sorry, continue. No, I mean, like, because I also was thinking when I was reading that letter that he writes Ron is, you know, he very much seems like the person who's watching Fox News and truly believes that he's seeing the truth versus what everybody else is seeing around him.
That's so interesting. Like, Percy Weasley being the, like, this is what happens when you trust in your government too much character is really interesting. Like, there is a strangely strong anti-government message in Harry Potter. Like, do not fully trust your government. Question your government, question what it is that they're talking about, question the big news outlets, which, considering everything else that Joanne has written and done and everything else that she wrote into the series, is very interesting, and I've never thought about it until this moment. And that is interesting. Percy Weasley being the character where you're like, this is what happens when you trust, when you put too much faith in your government and not in your higher, like, learning institutions. Fascinating.
Percy's kind of like, and this is not really thought out, so feel free to tell me I'm wrong, but Percy is kind of like a canonical modern day version of young Dumbledore or Grindelwald, just without any of like the visionary or like thought leadership ambition and aspiration that they had, right? Because what we know about Grindelwald and Dumbledore's children are like as young adults is, you know, they had all the visions, but at their core, they were power hungry and they were willing to step over anybody and everybody to get there, right? Percy wants all the power, but doesn't have any original thought or idea. He just wants to be the guy, you know, in front of the camera.
Right. Percy is the Ben Shapiro of the wizarding world.
I mean, so it seems like we're discovering a new theme within Harry Potter, you know, about power. It seems to me, and the lengths that people will go to get it. And, you know, and I think we see power being sought after or sought to be maintained in not so ethical ways. One of the questions I did want to pose to you guys was, okay, so in Order of the Phoenix, Harry gets accused. Well, no, Harry does do magic when the Dementors come to attack him and his cousin, and Fudge is the presiding judge over this hearing. So what do we think about the fact that, like, the judicial and the executive branches in the ministry seem to overlap?
Yeah, well, that's not good. But what I'll say about that whole trial was the differences between kind of modern day and then is that trial was the corrupt minority in charge of the trial and not allowing a full account of the facts, but the majority of the rest of the judicial body standing up saying, no, this is some bullshit. He's a kid. He's fine. Let's move on. Whereas what we just saw happen, you know, in Congress the past couple of days was the presiding body wanting to get to the truth of it all, but the minority body having the power to obfuscate and to lie and to ignore the basic facts and therefore acquit, which is the same result that happened to Harry, but for completely different reasons with a completely different process.
Yeah, and this is where I said earlier, where it's like some things that we see in Harry Potter are almost opposite of what we're seeing right now, but with the same sort of theme of not getting to the facts or obscuring the facts, or of laying the groundwork to make up your own facts that then incites people enough to try to take over the government. Because so when Dumbledore comes in to help Harry during this trial, he suggests that the Dementors were following orders from somebody else, or, you know, they were sent there. And he reminds Fudge during this, quote, "The ministry does not have the power to expel Hogwarts students, Cornelius, as I reminded you on the night of the 2nd of August. nor does it have the right to confiscate wands until charges have been successfully proven. Again, as I reminded you on the night of the 2nd of August, in your admirable haste to ensure that the law is upheld, you appear, inadvertently, I'm sure, to have overlooked a few laws yourself. We know it wasn't inadvertent. We know Fudge was just doing whatever he wanted because he was tired of Harry and just wanted to get rid of him. And so blatantly overrode the process that Harry should have gone through initially.
Yeah,
you were very right. Also, like, Fudge being so scared of this teenager, this 15-year-old boy, is hilarious to me. On the note of people sort of obscuring laws and rushing through stuff, or using the laws to their own ends, to get to their own means, you know what I'm trying to say. Like, he does the same thing when it, he does the same thing when it was with Hagrid as well, right? Back in Chamber of Secrets, and also yes. with Sirius and getting Sirius.
Right, Sirius outed. Was arrested without a trial.
Yeah.
Hagrid was arrested without, just because he was arrested for the same charge before, and they right. didn't know where else to.
Well, Hagrid wasn't really arrested so much as they just straight up sent Hagrid to jail. They were right. like, hey, there's been some stuff happening here, and you did some stuff like 50 years ago, so therefore you're just going to go to jail for a little while.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, because we don't know who else it could have been, so, but we don't have anything linking you to the crime.
It's a lot of posturing. It's a lot of, like, the ministry, like, doing a lot of stuff to make them appear, perhaps, that they are doing things and they, like, actually care about what happens, but truly not going
Which
through.
I think we've definitely seen over the last 4 years, where,
yeah,
of having a government that appears to be doing things or says that they're doing things.
Yeah. I also think that, well, I also think that that posturing was happening right around the time of the insurrection, right after where everybody in Trump's cabinet quit. Like, that was just posture. I don't, like, they stayed on for X amount of time and, like, pretended that they cared by quitting a sinking ship.
You want to talk about some real bullshit posturing?
Yeah, absolutely, please.
So, let's go back to everyone's favorite tortoise, Mitch McConnell. So, not only was his wife, Elaine Chao, former Transportation Secretary, yeah. part of said posturing,
yeah.
but Mitch McConnell said throughout the entire past couple weeks that he was open to hearing the arguments, and he was kind of, he was like low-key virtue signaling that he was like open to convicting. Then he very much over the course of this quote-unquote trial was like, no, we're not doing this. And then right after the vote earlier today, he gave
it
a floor speech.
It made me so mad.
Yeah, he gave a floor speech where he like basically laid out the entire argument to convict the former president. It's just some bullshit.
He literally, like, he backed up everything the House managers said and then said, we don't have the jurisdiction to, like, to convict him, so that's why I voted to acquit. But the thing that made me the most angry was he said, yes, he was impeached while he was president, but the House managers did not deliver the papers until after he was out of office. After he had specifically stated the Senate would not even consider the trial until the day of the inauguration.
What I will say is, so from my home state, Richard Burr, who's retiring, which is an important point to note when saying he voted to convict the former yep. president today. In his statement explaining his rationale, he said, you know, I firmly, or maybe it wasn't Senator Burr, it might have been Bill Cassidy from Louisiana. Either way, either Cassidy or Burr, and you can look at the full statements and find out for yourself, said, you know, I still believe that the impeachment of a former president is unconstitutional, but because the Senate is a place of precedent and we voted to have this be constitutional, I therefore can only cast this vote based on the actual evidence of an impeachable crime, not the entire theory of whether this is constitutional in the first place. Which, again, there's a certain amount of spinelessness in only voting for it because you're retiring. Right. But I appreciate, hey, I still believe we shouldn't have done this in the first place, but we're doing it. Therefore, I'm going to give an honest vote because we're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, he was probably the only one that actually considered the fact that they had already voted that this was indeed constitutional, because I think a lot of other Republicans still were like, oh, I voted to acquit because it's unconstitutional, even after the Senate had made the decision that they actually did have the right to have this trial.
Yeah, well, also, you know, inciting insurrection is also unconstitutional, so.
Yeah, and, you know, to this point about throwing the baby out with the bathwater to do anything for power, Mitch McConnell, I mean, look, Mitch McConnell is awful for a million and a half reasons that go far beyond everything that's happened in the past month and a half. But I'd imagine he's probably running scared as the minority leader of the Republican caucus in the Senate, because if he were to, in some alternate reality, vote for impeachment, he probably would have a leadership fight on his hands with the emerging forces that are happening behind him with Cruz and Hawley. There's probably a fair amount of, it's not just power at the top. I think you can look at this, it cascades over so many levels where everyone's running scared from the next kind of emerging force behind them. And that all eventually rises to the top, and it's kind of this vicious cycle.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's because, you know, so we've been talking about how people want to maintain their power within Harry Potter, and I think that is entirely true that Mitch McConnell is trying to, he just wants to hold the power that he has had over the last however many years. So I guess, like, where does it come in that, you know, these figures in our government take an oath that they're supposed to uphold the oath that they take in office, they're supposed to uphold the Constitution, and all of these things, the position really asks you to be more ethical than that, you know, where you shouldn't even have to consider your reelection in order to do what's right. And Representative Neguse today had a wonderful part of his closing argument, and it reminds me of what Dumbledore tells Fudge in at the end of Goblet of Fire, where he's trying to convince him that Voldemort has come back, and he's trying to tell him, you know, you have to do this, this, and this to get ready. And he says, quote, "I tell you now, take the steps I have suggested, and you will be remembered, in office or out, as one of the bravest and greatest ministers of magic we have ever known. Fail to act, and history will remember you as the man who stepped aside and allowed Voldemort a second chance to destroy the world we have tried to rebuild."
But see, this is where I keep coming back to what I brought up earlier, which is the populist movement behind the difference in opinion. Because in Harry Potter, in the Wizarding World, right, there's a much smaller group of people who are pushing for Voldemort's narrative, right? So Fudge will be remembered in history for this, but it wasn't a sustained thing. It's really this one-off group that pops up every 10, 20 years or whatever, and they do their thing, but then eventually the good guys win because the majority of the population seems to be galvanized more by the positive message than the negative one. Whereas in our society, I think we kind of are at a parting of the ways here, like Fudge and Dumbledore were, but the difference is there's almost equally as big of a force on each side of the scale. So, you know, for example, Donald Trump may end up running in 2024, God forbid. He may end up going away. But if he doesn't, there's going to be a Josh Hawley. There's going to be a Ted Cruz. There's going to be a Rick Scott, who low-key is the real Voldemort of the American political system. Like, there's going to be someone else who steps up and assumes that power vacuum, and with it, all the millions of people who are behind that type of movement. So that's a rosy picture I just painted. You're welcome.
It reminds me so much about, like, how we without accountability, like you're saying, just without accountability, history is doomed to repeat itself. One of the, you know, Joanne wrote the Voldemort and the Death Eaters so closely to the Nazi party, or at least it's so clearly based on that, although she did fuck up in other ways and make the Harry Potter books like a little anti-Semitic. But that all aside, she did so much, did so clearly base them off of the Nazi party. And but we look at places that have had these, like, who have, you know, had these terrible, terrible leaders commit atrocious crimes. And you look at Germany and you look at how much Germany holds themselves accountable for the actions and the horrors of World War II, and like teaches them in class and like works so hard to ensure that that never happens again. And in the way that, like, with Harry Potter seems to be set in a world where they work so hard to push away the atrocities of Lord Voldemort to create a seemingly stable society, but it is not truly stable because it could crumble at the moment that Voldemort comes back and tries to regain any sense of power. And that's kind of what we're doing right now, at least in our society. Sorry,
and like I think that relates back to your point from earlier of, like, you know, fear of the name increases the fear of the thing itself, where if you're not, you know, putting in the effort to talk about what's going on or what happened in the past, then people are, you know, doomed to repeat it. And, you know, and I think we see that especially with, like, how, since social media doesn't exist in the wizarding world, and, you know, 95% of people are getting their news and staying up to date with the Daily Prophet, and the fact that the government is actively being like, don't publish this, and so then nobody knows what's going on, and then it makes them more susceptible to the Imperius curse, like we had that quote from the book that I read earlier. You know, it's just so interesting that, you know, to have accountability, you also have to have, like, information available to everybody so that they can see what's going on. And, you know, what we've seen over the last 4 years is Trump laying the groundwork for fake news, and so that he can immediately discredit any information that he doesn't want to get out, or if it does get out, then he can, he's already built in the, oh, that's not true, that was reported by CNN, you can't trust them.
Didn't we used to have, you know, paralleling it to the real world, didn't we used to have, like, laws in place to keep our news, like, honest, I guess, is the only way that I can put it, and, like, fact-checked? When did we take that away? That's just, that's not done us any good in getting rid of fact check laws. I don't know what they are. That was a thought. That was, like, not a well thought out thought. Fuck the Daily Prophet, by the way. They suck. What's up with that? How is it that there are truly only two news sources in Harry Potter?
There's really only
Stephen,
one.
Stephen, please go into your ministry rant.
There's really only one news source in Harry Potter, and that is the Daily Prophet. Because look, there is no state-run media in American society, at least one that's pushing an opinionated narrative. Certainly, I guess you could argue C-SPAN is state-run media, but that's not really the same thing, right? Certainly, depending on who's in the White House, and these, like, Fox News or MSNBC may be more of the mouthpiece for the government at times, but there is no one-to-one comparison. But the Quibbler doesn't count as a news source, because the Quibbler literally is just a magazine for crazies up until the point they assume the mantle, because there's nothing else, and then they get some traction, fair enough. But the difference is like they're not like a CNN or an MSNBC to the Daily Prophet's Fox News, because no one ever viewed the Quibbler in the first place as a source of truth.
Right.
But yeah, the reason that the Daily Prophet is like the only skin in game, only game in town, insert metaphor here, is because the ministry controls every facet of employment, of economic stability, of really any sort of output, production output for that society to be measured against, the ministry controls.
Yeah, like that, I mean, besides up. Hogwarts until book five.
Right, like if you're not...
And the Weasley Wizard Wheezy's.
Well, yeah, but that only exists because Fred and George happened to have a friend who gave him 400 galleons and said, go to town. Right, so unless you have a rich benefactor, which is the only example of venture capitalism in the wizarding world, you either work for the government in some way, shape, or form, or you sell ice cream cones, or a creepy old guy who says creepy things to 11-year-olds and gives them wands. That's it.
Well, right, like, or Ollivander? Like, are the
Ollivander's creepy as shit. I like him, but imagine if you're an 11-year-old and you walk in, this guy's like, I've been expecting you. Many great things he did, terrible, but great. Like, that's creepy.
That's a little weird. Yeah, I've never thought about that.
Yeah.
That's kind of great.
As a complete side note, and I'm not going to plug the podcast here because I do that enough, but on an episode of one of the other podcasts I co-host, we just talked about all the other types of series we'd like to see if they do start making new Harry Potter content, the issues with them making new content aside. And one of the ones I would love to see is like kind of like an Office or Parks, like a workplace type kind of comedy of all of the businesses in Diagon Alley.
That'd be amazing. That'd be great.
Right, like Florian and Garrick Ollivander just having a beer together at the end of the day, just like talking about their days. Madame Malkin talking about whatever. You know, like, I would love that.
Madame Malkin knows a lot of gossip. Like, you just know. You just know. She knows all. She has a lot of shit on a lot of people.
Yeah.
That's great. I love that.
One question I had, I have two more like preformed thoughts I'd like to share. I'll share one now and then I'll share one at the end. One is, I think a lot of the issues about that we see in the wizarding world around how the government thinks about its role come down to what I find to be the Ministry of Magic's core mission, right? The way I understand it is the ministry really exists to protect the international statute of secrecy. Because that's like the thing we hear about more than anything. We don't hear any other sort of underlying mission of the ministry. It's always their job is to protect wizards from muggles, right? Which inherently sets up this kind of very othering culture, which very much means that they can base every kind of instance of autonomy, instance of power centralization, every instance of government overreach into this bucket of we're doing it to protect wizards from muggles, right? Whereas, you know, in American society, in theory, our mission is, you know, to, you know, form a more perfect union, establish order, promote justice, the tranquility thing, right? All that good stuff from the preamble to the Constitution is what I was trying to quote there. But, you know, that can be interpreted so many different ways, as we see. But that at least is a core mission that, in theory, promotes a good. Whereas the ministry's whole raison d'etre is to, like, promote secrecy and protect from another.
So it's really interesting that you bring up the Constitution, because I agree. And also I think that the ministry plays a much more active role in the wizarding community than the Constitution plays in ours, because the Constitution is not an active document. It is a passive document. It does not actively protect our rights. You have rights, but we're not going to actively protect them. Like, there's no, like, the whole thing that came up this summer that was like, hey, nowhere in the Constitution does it say that, wait, I might be mixing two threads. But, you know, like, the police are not here to actively protect you. They are here to come after the fact and say, hey, that was wrong. We're going to punish the person who does it. But there's no law that says that, like, the police need to actively protect you. In what the Constitution means to me, which is great, This is weird. I'm plugging what the Constitution means to me. Highly recommend. It's on Amazon Prime. It's like it's a one-woman show. She talks about, does the Constitution protect your right to have an abortion? And the answer is, if you combine a bunch of things, it says that, yes, you have the right to secrecy when it comes to inside the home and also bodily autonomy, but it does not say you get to have an abortion. It says you have a right to your body. So it's considered a passive document and not like an active document. And if we're comparing the Constitution to the Ministry of Magic and like all the shit that they do, I would say that the Ministry of Magic is actually much more of an active participant in the wizarding world. Like, it says, hey, you cannot do this. Hey, we are going to protect you from this. You can call us. We will be there and show up and whatever. Like, the way that the Ors like are essentially the wizarding police are like there to actively protect the community, theoretically. So anyway, I think that's really interesting because I just think that's fascinating. I'm so glad you brought that up.
That is really interesting. I never thought about that before, but like, now that I'm thinking about like all of the different departments that we see in the ministry, the only time we really see them is when, like, for example, during the Quidditch Cup, the whole ministry is working to make sure no muggles come to the, or discover the Quidditch Cup. Same thing with the magizoology part. Like, they're the ones transporting the dragons for the first task and make sure, like, no one sees them being transported. So I really never thought about that before, but that's, like, it literally all comes back to just making sure that muggles don't discover wizards, which then begs the question of, like, we know half-bloods exist, so how does that... Is there a law that says that, like, are you only allowed to tell people after you're married, or?
They probably, there was, the risk of inbreeding was too high, and they were like, all right. We're gonna give you a little bit of power back.
Yeah, either that, or some minister of magic at some point saw, like, a muggle and was like, damn, she's looking fine. And he's like, let's create a law, let's legalize, like, it's Henry VIII. Right? Like, it's, yeah. We're going to start this whole new thing now because I'm feeling a kind of way. But I think, you know, when your entire reason of being is to restrict and to promote secrecy, it's a lot easier to fall into that, what I'll call a trap, you know, or proactively, pursue kind of a police state, like, yeah. Very kind of singular dictatorial autonomy. Whereas in our society, while certainly that has happened many times, like, even today, like, our Constitution allows for states and local communities to have differing interpretations, right? If we want to use police as a prime example, to make it as simplistic and almost kind of, just basic as possible, right? Like, some people believe that police should solely be there to enforce laws and to restrict crime from happening, whereas some people believe that police should have a much larger role in promoting community and being part of the community. And it's less of a strict interpretation and more of like a kind of broader presence, right? Like, right. That's because our founding kind of reason of being is to promote that sort of evolution, whereas the wizarding world is very much around this very narrow kind of funnel of if we're not protecting our secrecy, we're doing something wrong. So we have to restrict. So we're only doing things that promote that.
Yeah, fully.
The other thought I had, again, and this is a lot more fun. If we're comparing Percy to Ben Shapiro, does that then mean that Lee Jordan, Fred Weasley, and George Weasley are Jon Favreau, Tommy Vitor, and John Lovett? And like, they're crooked media? Because I'm down with that.
I don't know what that is.
Great. That fell flat. So for all the listeners, because I care a lot about this.
Please.
Sarah, you have to know what I'm talking about, right?
It kind of went over my head, too. I'm sorry. Really?
Pod Save America.
Oh!
Pod Save the World.
Okay. Sure. Yes. Yes.
Literally.
Fred and George and Lee are like.
They created Resistance Radio.
Podcasts. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, fully. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a metaphor I'm fine with. Apparently, y'all don't really care about it too much, but I do.
I'm sorry. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, which is ironic considering I do podcasts, but I'm bad at that. But
look,
I do know Pod Save America. They're highly recommended on my Spotify all the time.
One of my former bosses is the political director at Crooked Media, and I always think, would she hire me? And I think the answer is always no. Yeah, but look, if I stopped telling jokes and making metaphors because people didn't appreciate them, I would be mute by now. So I'm not going to stop.
I do love that comparison, though. I mean, they are absolutely like that. They are that. They are leftist media. They are Antifa, for lack of a better word. I fully believe that they are like the radicalized left. They grew up in poverty. They don't believe in higher education because they quit. And they're like, ah, fuck school. We don't need it. And they like go off and do their own thing. Yeah.
So what we see, you know, toward the end of Goblet of Fire, through Order of the Phoenix, and sort of through the end of the Harry Potter series, is the minister doesn't want to lose his job. He wants to maintain his own power, even at the cost of possibly thousands of lives, depending on how big we think the wizarding world is. Because he doesn't want to admit that Voldemort's back. He's trying to discredit Harry. And ultimately, that ends up leading into his own ministry, getting infiltrated by the enemy, and him losing his job anyway. The next minister gets murdered, and then the minister after that is under the Imperius curse by Voldemort and his followers. And all of those actions seem to really bring about the second Wizarding War and the big showdown between Harry and Voldemort that, you know, is the whole point of the plot of the series. At that same time, we see Trump, who has been, you know, wants to hold on to as much power as he can. You know, doesn't want to be president. He wants to be like a king, really. And laid the groundwork for the divisive climate that we see today, laid the groundwork for the insurrection, and, you know, how we speak matters. Like, even though he didn't say, like, you know, go beat up senators, you know, fighting like hell, trial by combat, which is what Giuliani said. You know,
that was wild. Look, I'm sorry to interrupt, but Rudy Giuliani using Game of Thrones as a reference point to go to the Capitol is just absolute. Like, Greg Clegane popped Oberyn's head like a grape. And that's the metaphor that Rudy's hanging. And that's not like the wildest thing Rudy's been a part of, obviously, in recent time. So, like, whatever. But that was insane.
No, it absolutely was. And it's horrifying. And, but all of that led to incitement and people storming the Capitol, actively looking to murder and kidnap people in Congress. And so, like, how can we, like, what's the overlap between these two situations where the pursuit of maintaining power has these devastating consequences that absolutely lead to people losing their lives and huge fights breaking out?
You know what I think of? I think of that scene in Malfoy Manor where they're torturing that teacher and you have all of the like heads of the pureblood families sitting around the table that may or may not want to be there, but they're still there because they're like utterly terrified of losing Voldemort's favor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I think of.
Shout out to like, Charity Burbage. She had like one appearance and wasn't a good one for her.
No, it was not. Hey, but that's another person that exists in the Harry Potter universe who is against Voldemort. One of 16 people that we know of.
But actually, she's not a bad point to bring up just because what she taught, right? She taught Muggle studies.
Yeah.
And I will bash forever the education system in the wizarding world, specifically posit to teach at Hogwarts. Her subject, at least in theory, I don't know much about what she actually taught, seems valid, seems like a really good thing they should be teaching. And I think that's how we as a society, like, so you brought up the Nazis earlier, you brought up the Third Reich. Like, yeah, Germany now is very good about being transparent about their past. But things like, you know, like the Führer bunker, they didn't have a, they put a parking lot over it and pretended it didn't exist. And they only put a sign up within the past like 20 years saying this is where that was. Like, we as a society have to not, you know, who this whole thing.
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, history repeats itself. Like, it really does. And not only will it repeat itself, but we've got, as evidenced by this last election, at least 75 million Americans who are more than willing to support it in the very near future. So, like, this isn't like a one, like in the Wizarding world, Voldemort is this one-off thing that happens to happen. He came back twice in 20 years, whatever, right? Again, in our society, we've already got, they already have the people power they need, right? And the figureheads can rotate in and out depending on who's the flavor of the week. Like that. Right. So, like, education's how we combat that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's the same thing where, you know, we see how Germany has handled their past and has used education to recognize history without glorifying it, which is the whole battle we see with all of these statues and monuments in the South, where people are like, you know, you can't take down history. And it's like, well, there's a difference between remembering history and like actively celebrating certain figures in history that don't have or didn't do very good things.
Well, it's, history is told by the survivors. There is a lot of history that we have forgotten. So I say, why not just forget history? Fuck them. Take them down. Who cares?
But that's actually a really great point. History is told not by the winners, but by the survivors. Because Jefferson Davis and a large contingent of the Confederate States of America saw very few repercussions for the quite literal insurrection that they waged against the Union for 4 years in the 1800s. And because of the lack of punishment and justice that was brought upon their shoulders, we had everything that happened during Reconstruction. And then you fast forward into kind of the early 20s and a lot of the oppression throughout the Depression, all the way up through the Civil Rights Movement. Like, that all exists in modern day. I mean, I would probably argue that there unfortunately still would be some forms of racism to this day had that not happened. But it's been perpetuated to the extent that it has, largely because the Union did not come down hard enough post-war on all of those Confederate generals, which, like, you know, one-to-one equivalency, we just acquitted the former president of inciting a violent insurrection. Mm-hmm. And we're like, you know, whatever, it's fine.
Yeah.
Not great. Not great, Bob.
Yeah. It's the same thing as, you know, acquitting, you know, 13 pureblood Death Eaters that then come right back, you know, in Goblet of Fire when Voldemort returns. They were just waiting for, they were literally just waiting for him to come back so they could just continue what they were doing all along.
They're just hanging out on their wizarding yachts and busting wizard unions or fucking whatever, and just, who do you think is the Jeff Bezos of the wizarding world? I don't know. That's okay. I would love to see that in a series. Give me like Arrested Development, but like with a pureblood family in Harry Potter. I think that would be really funny. I will pitch that to HBO Max. I have a question. How the fuck are all of these people under the Imperius curse? Don't you have to be like actively participating in this curse to like to control them? Or is it just like a one-off, like, hey, we're gonna rearrange what you think and send you back off into your life so you're still like under the, you know what I mean?
Before Sarah gives the right answer, because I'm sure she's researched this, what I will say is I think that JKR got a little fast and loose with a lot of the like the magical lore behind that, because I think you're right. I thought you had to actively be a participant in engaging the subject with the curse. I think the world building got a little fast and loose as that progressed.
I also want to offer up my solution that I thought of. It's just a multi-level marketing scheme where like one Death Eater, like, Imperios somebody who then goes and Imperios, like, two other people, and then each of them do it, and then each of them, and it's just, like, a giant, like, join the Death Eaters, we'll give you a car, pyramid scheme. That's my guess.
A complimentary skull-esque mask.
Ooh, yeah, mm-hmm. That also, like, gives you a rash, probably. That you can't remove because it's wizarding magic. What's up? Sarah, do you have an answer to this?
So I'm currently open to page 531 of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. When they go to Gringotts, and it says, Harry raised the Hawthorne wand beneath the cloak, pointed it at the old goblin, and whispered for the first time in his life, Imperio. A curious sensation shot down Harry's arm, a feeling of tingling warmth that seemed to flow from his mind, down the sinews and veins connecting him to the wand and the curse it had just cast. The goblin took Bellatrix's wand, examined it closely, and then said, ah, you have had a new wand made, Madame Lestrange. I'm just trying to see if he has to, like, actively... Yeah, okay, here we go. So then it says, a new wand, said Travers, approaching the counter again. Oh, no, this is a different... So he has to cast it again on a different person.
Right, but, like, this is what I'm saying. Like, it feels like she got fast and loose with it because, like... Is someone continue like 24/7 with Pious Thickness just re-imperiousing him? Like, how does that work?
Okay, this says...
So it sounds like he just... Sorry, I'm not to...
Please, no, you were very much on a roll.
So he casts it on the goblin and then casts it on Travers. And then it seems like the goblin's still like ready to take them down to the vault. And then it says, Harry looked back at Travers, who was still rooted to the spot, looking abnormally vacant, and made his decision. With a flick of his wand, he made Travers come with them. So it sounds like this, as soon as you cast it, it's active until you, even if you're not focusing on the person, because it sounds like they're already leaving, and then he looks back, and Travers is still imperioed.
But does that imply then that if, like, you could conceivably have the Imperious curse cast on you for in perpetuity?
Barty Crouch Jr. as Moody says that years back there were a lot of witches and wizards being controlled by the Imperious curse, and it was some job for the ministry trying to sort out who was being forced to act and who was acting of their own free will. And that... fighting the Imperious curse takes real strength of character. So
Harry, on the next page, Harry does cast Imperio again on the same person.
Maybe it's got like a half-life kind of deal where the longer you're under it, the weaker it becomes.
I guess it's sort of, I don't know. I mean, I would assume it would probably also depend on the strength of the wizard that's casting it. Like, I would bet that Voldemort's Imperious curse is probably stronger than Harry's.
But Voldemort does cast Imperio on Harry, I think, right? Later in at the end of Goblet of Fire, when they're in the graveyard and Harry does manage to fight it. Wait, what does that say? Let's find that. I'll find that.
But see, what I'm curious about is, who was it that cast the curse on Pious Thickness? Was it Travers? I forget. It doesn't matter. But regardless, let's say I cast the Imperious curse on you, Sarah, right? If you don't fight it off and I choose not to relinquish the curse, in theory, am I then controlling you with the Imperious curse for the rest of your life? Then second question, could I also then go Imperious Izzy? And like, am I allowed, like, how does that work?
It sounds like you are able to Imperious multiple people at the same time. It sounds like Harry has a goblin and Travers Imperious at the same time. Imperious is the goblin, then Imperious is Travers, but it seems like the goblin isn't all of a sudden like, wait, this isn't Bellatrix Lestrange's wand. Like, he doesn't sort of come out of it immediately.
This says, and Harry felt for the third time in his life the sensation that his mind had been wiped of all thought. It was bliss not to think, and it was as though he were floating, dreaming. Just answer no, say no, just answer no. I will not, says a stronger voice in the back of his head. I won't answer. Just answer no. I won't do it. I won't say it. Just answer no. I won't. And then he breaks it. But he describes it as like a dream state where like you're kind of being like told what to do, it sounds like. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like your free will is sort of gone. Where you're like, yeah, sure, I'll do whatever.
The Imperious Curse is a really big plot hole, I think, is, love to see Joanne talk her way out of that one.
Well, there probably is some article on WizardingWorld.com where they talk all about the history of it, and you learn that the founder of the Imperious Curse was actually, like, a black gay man, so it's a progressive curse, so we're fine. It just feels like a thing that, I don't quote me on that, because I haven't looked at the article, but I'm sure if you Google it, there's probably some retcon that she's put in there, so she's good.
Yeah. Checks out.
Oh, I had a thought, and now I can't find it again.
Welcome to my life.
Glad to be here.
Yeah.
Just, you know, the Imperious Curse, having to, like, Imperious a bunch of people to get them to do what you say sounds exhausting, especially when you really only have, like, 28 minions. Just, like, a lot of... They're stretched thin. They should unionize, really, against Voldemort. Anyway.
He seems like a union-busting kind of boss.
He totally does! He would hire Pinkertons, like, 100%.
Yeah.
He probably has infiltrated, like, anyway.
Yeah, to the 28 people point, I mean, their strategy was, which I guess makes sense, this kind of counters everything I've been shouting about for every 15 minutes throughout the course of this podcast. Just like, yeah, their theory was, let's just take out the positions of power and then assume that the rest of society bends to our will, right? Which is a big assumption, that everyone is just going to be like a lamb in a herd and just go along with what's happening. But that's why they were able to do what they do, because they weren't trying to convince the thousands upon thousands of people. They were just trying to take over the positions of power with poorly thought out Imperious curses.
I would love to know what Voldemort's plan for a structure of government would be. He talks about, like, I mean, I guess, like, Dumbledore talks to, like, at the end of 4, he talks about, like, you need to get the giants on your side because Voldemort will offer them more power, like, offer them the ability to do whatever it is that they want to do. And it's like, is this really just, like, hey, you get to kill whoever you want, you get to torture whoever you want, you get to eat whoever you want, you get to do whatever the fuck you want. That's my promise to you if you join me. Which, like, is not so different than, although it's a little bit more, like, shrouded or, like, hidden through dog whistles, but, like, that's, like, not so different from what Trump was promising a lot of people, which is an interesting parallel, bringing it all the way back to the point of why it is that we are here today, this evening.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And sort of like, I mean, we don't really know what like wizarding society was like before, yeah. But it sort of seems like a very similar aspect of like the Make America Great Again promise, where it's like, we can go back to when like you had control of everything and, I don't know if like the purebloods had like actual governmental power. Like they have power in the form of like money and influence, but I don't know if they were actually in charge of anything before, but it sort of seems like it's along the same lines.
Just sort of like pitching, it sounds like it was a lawless wasteland, or they make it sound like it was a bit of a free-for-all, which is interesting.
I will say though, for a society that just used to, well, we've cursed already, I was going to clean up, for a society that used to just like shit in the middle of the hallway and then evaporate it, the fact that they have any form of a government now is a pretty decent sign of like evolution and progression. So I will gladly take them to task for all of the failings, but let's give them some credit. You know, again, they literally just used to shit themselves and be like, to evaporate, and they're, you know.
Well, I mean, with Voldemort's promise and Trump's promise to his base, it I feel like it's more like the Purebloods are tired of acting like they're not racist, and Voldemort would give them the permission to be openly racist in the same way that Trump is also giving people a space to be openly racist and sexist and xenophobic, because in 2020 and 2021, 90% of people are going to be like, that's fucked up that you think that. And he's giving them an opportunity to not have to like hide those feelings anymore.
Well, that's kind of it, is like Voldemort, and let me start over. Trump just finally said the quiet part out loud, right? Because generally speaking, conservatives have always kind of led with their chest on things like smaller government as it relates to corporations and, you know, fiscal policy and that sort of stuff. And always kind of the subtext has been a lot of the social inequity that they truly believe in. Whereas Voldemort just came out from the front and kind of like Trump in a way and said, no, like, replace America first with wizards first. And that's really kind of what it is. The only difference is to your point, I don't know if Voldemort had a clue what he would do with the actual functions of the government beyond just, hey, we're going to get rid of all the people who don't believe in what I believe. That's the difference, is, you know, Trump finally just said the quiet part out loud and emboldened millions of people to be like, oh yeah, I've always thought this too. If we're saying it now, great.
So do we think that there are actually a lot of like wizard racists, like big Voldemort supporters?
Well, I don't know, because at least in the world that we're presented throughout the books, we don't really see that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I have no clue. I would think there are, because in theory, a society is not going to be completely homogenous. Like, there's going to be differing opinions. But other than like kind of the background Slytherins, we're not really introduced to anybody who's like a passive supporter of like Voldemort's regime.
Do you remember that guy in the Evil Diagon Alley, which I cannot fucking remember the name of, that like has the hand?
Borgen?
The like evil hand.
Borgen, yeah.
Yeah. He seems like a passive Voldemort supporter. Or like, you know, semi-active Voldemort. Like, yeah. he's not really like...
He did employ Voldemort at one point.
Did he? I did not know that. I'm so out of touch with my Harry Potter lore. After I stopped role-playing on Twitter, it kind of just started to be a bit more of a background thing for me. But did not know that. Did not catch that.
When you look like I do, you have to be good at things in order to impress people. So for me, it's having Harry Potter knowledge.
I will say that your Harry Potter knowledge is very impressive. I've learned very much.
I have very few other things to do in my life, so thank you.
This is a great outlet. And now you have Percy as the Ben Shapiro of the Harry Potter world to take with you into conversation, which is so fucking funny to me. That's great.
Percy's up in his room polishing his prefect badge all goddamn day. Yeah, it fits. It all fits.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jeez, good times.
I was thinking before this, I was thinking about how interesting it is that Harry, who is like theoretically a like privileged kid, like nobody listens to him in any of this, which like, I guess we can sort of, you know, mark off as the fact that he's young. So we kind of get that he's young and hangs out with a band of hippies, and like all the Order of the Phoenix is just like, this like, I don't know, I feel like they would all go to Burning Man together kind of thing. But nobody really listens to Harry. And I was like, you know, if we ever redo Harry Potter, I feel like we need to make Harry belong to like a person of color, like deeply think that. I think a lot of the things that Joanne writes about in this book and a lot of the plot holes that I personally have issue with and the like could be very much solved with making Harry a person of color. And I will just say that, HBO Max, if you are listening for your Harry Potter series reboot, fuck whatever it is that you're planning to do, make Harry a person of color. It solves so much. It solves so many problems.
seeing as we're talking about Harry Potter and by extension Harry Potter characters reimagined as people of color, this is an opportune moment for me to do my shout out, which I do at least once an episode on any podcast I happen to be on, for my good friend Sydney Dean, aka Sid Sketched. If you check out her Instagram and her website and her Patreon and all that stuff, she is really talented and does a great job of promoting very inclusive art as it relates to the Wizarding World.
Nice. Love that.
She's the best.
Love that.
Do you have any other things that we want to add, or have we touched on everything that you guys wanted to chat about?
Well, this isn't my podcast, so I can't really make this offer as it relates to first year's pod, but there are probably some people listening who don't 100% agree with everything that we probably had to say tonight, because we had some takes, and I agree with everything we said, but, you know, fair enough. That's fine if you don't agree with everything. I think, I don't want to speak for Sarah, but I would encourage you, if you have an opinion that is different, to as particularly if it's an opinion that at least comes to the agrees on the core facts, right? This is something that I'm passionate about. We can have different opinions, as long as at the end of the day you believe that like it was an insurrection. Like, you have to agree on kind of the core truths. But from there, if your opinions are different and like you have kind of different takes on how we as a society should think about these sorts of things, Sarah can plug her own socials here, but by all means, like, reach out and chat about them, because this is how we get better and smarter as people and as society, right? Mm-hmm. It's one thing for us to shout into the void on this podcast, but like, if you as the listeners don't respond back and engage back, like, we have no reason to think our thoughts differently, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. Especially, you know, it completely relates to what we were talking about before, where it's like, you know, we want the open conversation as long as we can agree on that facts are facts, and you can't change those. You know, I always love when people interact with the podcast by emailing in. The email is firstyearspodcast@gmail.com. Also, the handle is @firstyearspod on Twitter and Instagram. And we can absolutely have a conversation about all the things.
Totally. If you think that Percy Weasley is not Ben Shapiro, but is in fact somebody else, I would love to hear that take. I'm so down with that. I think that is great. That's really all I have to add to that. I would love to know, Sarah, of course, anything anybody says about this.
Yeah.
So curious.
No, absolutely. So curious. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me for this episode.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun.
Yeah, I hope I get an invite back after this. Because, like, look, I sometimes I say stuff and I don't remember what I said. And people are like, I can't believe you said that. Like we're done. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I have no idea. So I really hope that whatever this podcast ends up being, like, if not reflects well, at least doesn't reflect poorly on the Muggle and Khaki brand. So, no, it was a pleasure, Sarah. You know I love your podcast, and I love any chance to talk with you, irrespective of the podcast, so this was fun.
I stand by everything I said, whether I remember it or not.
So. I always do. I always do. I just have zero, like, I black
out. Oh, blackout? Like, you just blackout what happened? Yeah, well, I understand. I got you. Yeah. I got you.
Do you guys have anything you want to shout out?
If I can, because why not? I co-host a podcast that Sarah's been on before, Creating Magic Podcast, where if not at the exact same intersection, at least we've had a fair amount of episodes with conversations in the same neighborhood, where we've talked a lot about representation in Harry Potter, you know, racial inequality and the representation, kind of thinking through a lot of JKR's litany of transphobic and just anti-LGBT. It's been bad. But we've had a lot of really what I think are great conversations with both members, direct members of the communities affected, as well as fellow allies, which are great. That's on Instagram. That's Creating Magic Podcast. Kind of a nice companion piece to what we did here in this episode, in my opinion.
I'm a person, and I don't do anything besides show up in places and say things. You can find me on Instagram @Izzy, etc., which is IZZY ETC, Or if you would like my true hot takes that I do not talk about on my Instagram because I was going to say I'm a public figure, but that's like just a lie. I'm my own public figure. I am my own public. You can find me on Twitter, which is at voodoodling, which is voodoodling, like voodoo and doodling. I picked it like a really long time ago and I've never changed it because everything else that I would want to put up is taken. So it's fine. But you can follow me there. And I talk a lot about just stuff like this. And I'm funny. I think my mom thinks I'm funny. So that's what matters to me.
Thank you guys so much for joining us for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back with our regularly scheduled episodes starting next week. As always, check in with us on Twitter or Instagram at First Years Pod. Check out our Mindful Magic Mondays or our trivia on Wednesdays to earn house points. And if you rate and review this podcast and leave your name in Hogwarts House, you'll get a shout out on here as well as double house points. So thank you guys again, and I will see you next time. First Years is a production of Matchbook. It's produced by Quinn Parker and myself, Sarah Jones-Dittmeyer. All sources can be found in our show notes or on our website at authorsarahjonesdittmeyer.info/firstyearspodcast. That's Sarah with an H, and Dittmeyer is spelled Dittmeyer. Please remember that staying a Harry Potter fan is the biggest form of revolt that you can have, and we are committed to continuing to make this fandom and this community safe and welcoming.